Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
It's a Wednesday edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find them in doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also a shout out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with the nagging pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. We understand that the Kansas City Royals are in a unique situation right now. They're in a unique spot. Now, they at one point had a top 10 farm system, but once you bring up all those prospects, once you have six rookies playing every day, your farm system's going to look a little bit different. Now, Baseball America went through re-ranking everybody's prospects, or farm system, and prospects for that matter, after the trade deadline. So, we want to find out why certain teams dropped where, some teams moved up, and I'll be quite honest with you, the top 10 prospects, that is, and Kansas City's farm system are a hell of a lot different than it was at the beginning of the season. In fact, it's going to change even more because two of those 10 are currently playing every day in Kansas City. So as we've mentioned, going into the season, it was Bobby Witt Jr. that was number one. Okay, well, he was on the opening day roster. Then you move it up to the next guy, and it was MJ Melendez. Well, MJ Melendez is back up in Kansas City, or moved up to Kansas City, and he graduated from prospect status. Then it was Vinny Pasquantino. Well, Vinny Pasquantino's been in Kansas City for a while now. Homered twice in the doubleheader yesterday. So Kansas City's moving them quickly, and it's not their fault, right? If their farm system drops from 10 to 22, which I know it's at 22 now, I can't remember exactly where it was before that, but if it drops that much, it doesn't mean that the farm system is just flat out terrible and that's due to drafting. No, it's because a lot of the guys that you built your farm system with, well, they're no longer in your farm system. They're now in the big leagues. But this is very telling what the top 10 looks like in a number of categories. So without further ado, here is Baseball America's top 10 for the Kansas City Royals. Their number one prospect, Nick Prado. And in 2 weeks, he will no longer be number one because he will graduate from that status. So the Royals farm system will drop a little bit more. So now it's very, very important that the Royals draft well for the next couple of years and infuse the system with talent through trades, off-season trades, in-season trades, deadline trades, whatever you want it to be, because they're only going to keep falling back further if they keep calling up a lot of the guys to Kansas City, which isn't a bad thing. It means that these guys have panned out for the most part. Not many top prospects can, let alone make it to the big leagues, but stay there. So Nick Prado is number one. The second-ranked prospect in the Royals organization, Gavin Cross, first-round pick, who they took out of Virginia Tech this year. He has already moved up to low A Columbia, was tearing it up in a couple of games with the surprise Royals down in the instructional league, I guess you could call it, the rookie league. So now he's in low A Columbia. I'd expect Gavin Cross to finish the year in low A Columbia. I don't think there's any need to move him up to high A Quad Cities. And really, there's no rush. He's already played a full season at Virginia Tech this year. Don't need to overwork him going into the offseason. So Gavin Cross already is the number two prospect in the Royals system. Number three, that would be Michael Massey, who you give him a month, he will not be eligible to be a prospect anymore. So your top three guys, two of them will no longer be in the top three here, as long as they stay healthy, as long as they continue to produce and they don't get moved back down to AAA. But Massey's number three. Number four is your second-round pick from this year's draft, Caden Wallace out of Arkansas, who's still down with the surprise Royals and rookie ball. I don't know yet if they will promote him to low A Columbia. I'm sure they'd like him to join Gavin Cross, but like I said with Gavin Cross, there's no rush, right? It's not like even if he tears it up or if he doesn't hit well down in rookie ball, there's no need to feel like you need to force him to low A. If he goes up to low A and he doesn't hit well, there's no need to overreact. These guys have played a full season. They might be worn down a little bit. But Caden Wallace, at least right now, is listed as the Royals' number four ranked prospect. Number five, local kid from Blue Valley Southwest, my high school, Ben Kuderna, is the fifth ranked prospect in Kansas City's organization. He's been pitching very well in Columbia this year. Much better. I wouldn't say Frank Mozzicato, the first round pick from last year, has been bad, but Ben Kuderna has been far better. I wouldn't be shocked to see Kuderna get a promotion to Quad Cities before the end of the year. There was a couple promotions yesterday. Nick Lofton moved up to AAA. Diego Hernandez moved from Quad Cities to AA Northwest Arkansas. So a couple pieces moving around. Logan Porter also got promoted to AAA Omaha. So across the board, the Royals were making some promotions. If you feel the need to promote a 18, 19-year-old up to high A, you could. I think he's been pitching well enough, but also at the same time, you don't want him to go up there and get shelled to end out the season. You might just want him to finish out the year in Columbia, pitch well enough, then start him in high A next year. So Ben Kuderna made the big leap all the way up to top five in the Royals farm system. Number six, who we've already seen in Kansas City, I'd expect to see him back in September, Michael Garcia, shortstop who made a big jump from Northwest Arkansas all the way up to the big leagues, started every game, I believe it was, in that four-game series against the Yankees. Defense was a little bit suspect, though I think in the grand scheme of things, he will be a very good defender. I thought he hit well. He was fun to watch. He didn't have a lot of pop, but he was 21, 22 years old. So another young guy I really like in the system. You know, he feels like if the Royals were to move on from Nicky Lopez in the next 2 years, I think Michael Garcia would become the next Nicky Lopez. So take that for what you will. If you like Nicky Lopez, if you feel like he fits in the Royals lineup, hey, I would love for Nicky Lopez to stay all the way up until the Royals' next contender, whenever that may be. But there's no guarantees in baseball. Michael Garcia, though, feels very similar to a Nicky Lopez, but even with a little bit more pop. So he's listed at number six in the Royals' top 10. Number seven, just mention his name, promoted yesterday, Nick Lofton, who I really, really like. You know, I think the argument has always been, well, do you take Massey or Lofton? Why not both? I mean, Nick Lofton's another guy that can move around. He was taken in the same draft where the Royals took Bobby Witt Jr., who's a shortstop out of Baylor. But since being a shortstop, he's bounced around. He's played some third base. He's played some second base. He played some center field. And when you're flexible like that, you're a utility guy, it makes it easier to find you a spot at the big league level. It's how Whit Merrifield in 2016 was able to break through to the big leagues. Now, it's taken him a lot longer than I think it will Nick Lofton, but being able to play multiple positions, well, you're not blocked by anybody. You know, in center field, he'd be blocked by Michael A. Taylor right now, which I believe Michael A. Taylor will stay in center field for the Royals all the way up until maybe the deadline next year. I think if Michael A. Taylor's still here by July of next year, August of next year, he will be traded. And that would then open up a spot for Nick Lofton. But just promoted to AAA Omaha, he's been tearing it up with the Naturals. And I think that's a big pat on the back to Drew Saylor, this hitting development, because when you go over the Royals drafts in the last couple of years, you might get one hit. Like you get 2018, 19, 20, 20, 21. We're always hearing about one guy, and you have to go back and say, okay, what draft were they in? You know, so far in 2018, that 2018 draft class, I love what we've seen from Brady Singer. Maybe that's just being a little bit of recency bias, that we love Brady Singer. He's looked good, and he's looked better than anybody else in the 2018 draft class. But then you've had some guys that have fallen off. In 2019, you got Bobby Witt Jr., but Nick Lofton was a guy drafted right after him, not in the first round, but Nick Lofton was a pick that I think at the time it felt like a good one, but not anything that was, wow, you just took that guy at that spot. But Nick Lofton, all he's done since coming over to Kansas City is hit. You know, he'll be 24 by the end of this year. So kind of in that same ballpark of Vinny Pasquantino and Michael Massey, a little bit more seasoned prospects. They're 23, 24, 25. But in Northwest Arkansas this year, he played in 90 games and slashed 270, 354, 422 with 12 home runs and 47 RBIs. Only played in one game so far with Omaha, was 0 for 4 in that game with one walk. But I expect Nick Lofton to fulfill that prospect ranking. I'd expect to see him in Kansas City next season. And I thought he was going to break through the big leagues before Michael Massey, but unforeseen circumstances forced the hand, and Michael Massey got to play in the Toronto series, and now is the everyday second baseman for the Royals. Number 8 on this list, Jonathan Bolin. I said that kind of like a question, but I like Jonathan Bolin a lot. He's a guy that if he didn't have Tommy John last year, he would already be in Kansas City. He would have been the guy instead of John Heasley, who I tipped my cap to last night, was great in a spot start, a doubleheader start. But Jonathan Bolin would have been that guy. Big 6'6", 240-plus pound starter, sinker baller, but Tommy John really set him back. And now the numbers have not been good this year. He had a couple of rehab starts down with the Arizona Royals, had a couple of rehab starts with Northwest Arkansas, and the ERA has skyrocketed. So maybe a strong offseason, not having to rehab, but working on his craft more, will give him a chance next year to maybe not compete for a rotational spot, but compete for a spot where maybe he's a long reliever. He gets a couple spot starts, but I'm still high on Jonathan Bolin. But again, he's one of those seasoned guys, you know, 24, 25. At one point, if he reaches age 26, I mean, you're not really looking at him as a prospect anymore. It's more of a guy that you're just trying to fill a roster spot with. So he's 8. Number 9, Jackson Coar. I simply can't put my finger on Jackson Coar. I don't know what it is. I mean, you go back to last year, with his numbers down in AAA, I would have believed that Jackson Coar would have the best stuff of anybody from that 2018 draft class. He was going to be up there with Brady Singer. I mean, you would have had a starter once again throw a 99, wipeout changeup, good curveball, and we've seen the movement on it. I just don't know why the numbers aren't there. You know, from time to time, he's looked good this year out of the bullpen in certain spots, long relief. Maybe just one inning. But more often than not, he gets hit around. And that's maybe the good thing. He's not walking a ton of guys anymore. He's just being hit. He's just being flat out hit. And I don't know when you pull the plug on and say, well, Jackson Coar can actually be something. If Jackson Coar not being something means that Chris Bubich, Daniel Lynch, and Brady Singer can be something in a rotation, maybe that's what you have to bargain with, which I think most fans, if you get three pitchers from that 2018 draft class, you'd be okay with it.
Yeah, when we talked to Mike Boddicker about it on the morning show, it's the same answer every time when talking about when we ask him what he sees wrong with Jackson Coar, and it's the mental game, really the mental aspect of it. And because, like you said, the evidence is there. You go back and look at his college highlights. Hell, even his first year down in the minors, he was lighting up, tearing it up, putting up strikeout numbers like you see now with Brady Singer. So he needs that same type of confidence boost that we saw Singer get similar to Singer this year.
I just don't know when it would come, because remember when Brady Singer broke into the league in the COVID year, Brady Singer had a pretty good year. I think he had a couple of good starts that already gave him that confidence. Jackson Coar hasn't had that.
When
you look at maybe a outing where he had a long relief, you know, 2-3 innings, didn't allow a run, you feel like, man, that's something you can build on. But when that's something you're building on, you can't ride it out forever, because the next time you go out there, you may get shelled for 4 runs in an inning. And Jackson Coar really needs that start where he goes, like a John Heasley start last night. Mm-hmm. You know, 5 and a third, your stuff looks good. And, you know, John Heasley, he's been knocked around a little bit, but credit to John Heasley, he doesn't crumble. You know, I really thought yesterday in game 2, I go, man, I'd be lucky to get 4 innings out of John Heasley, just because I didn't like the matchup with Chicago, but he was great. I saw this tweet from Royals Farm Reporters, one of my favorite Royals follows. They said John Heasley was lights out in his last start in Omaha. So finding his stuff again. And the Royals young guns, at least the pitching staff, we've been talking about the hitters all the time, but the pitching staff has been great. And I know we want to bag on Cal Eldred all the time. I've done it before, but hell, the numbers are numbers here. Stats are stats. They've looked good. And Jackson Coar, I'd like to see him in September, get a start or two just to see. Just to see. Because at some point, you're going to have to decide what you have in him. Are we completely done with the idea he'll ever be a starter? I think so. I don't think we can see Jackson Coar in the rotation, but that doesn't mean he can't be a successful bullpen arm. One of my favorite outings Jackson Coar has ever had in his big league career was in Toronto. It was game one of that series where the Royals sent all the young guys up there. And Jackson Coar had to pitch in the sixth inning after Angel Serpa had a one-run game. And I went, man, that's because all their reliable bullpen arms, they weren't vaccinated, so they weren't up there. And Jackson Coar allowed a leadoff double to an all-star catcher and then got out of it. Got a strikeout, and then I believe got two groundouts. That's a Jackson Coar where I go, man, in the future, a future Royals contender, he's got stuff to hang around in the bullpen. He's just been barreled this year. Last year, he couldn't throw a strike and looked like he was incredibly nervous, but I like how you bring up Marco, or at least what Mike Boddicker said, that it's mental. And baseball is such a mental game. And when you have it in the back of your mind going, man, I've never struggled like this, and I don't know how to get out of it, because big league hitters will let you know when you're struggling. That's the age-old saying, that big league hitters, they'll let you know when your pitches are missing. No, you'll hear it, you'll see it, and Jackson Coar has not missed many barrels in his big league career.
You almost got a feeling. I mean, this is my thing. I guess I am kind of saying it. The next pitching coach needs to be somebody who can, because looking at all the young arms the Royals have right now, and developing them is being an issue. It's got to be your next pitching coach either has to be either is the guy or person that was able to work with Brady Singer and turn him into the pitcher that we're seeing today, or it's got to be somebody that can come in and fix one of these pitchers. Because maybe that's what it is. I'm not saying give up on Coar or Boland or Lacy. It's not that. But there is a timetable here, and if somebody can come in and turn around Coar in an off season, hell, even Lynch too, because
Lynch has at least has gotten further in his career than Jackson Coar has. But I see your point, right? You still want with that stuff that Daniel Lynch has, he can't be
a fifth guy in a rotation.
Exactly. He's got to be top three, at least, in Kansas City for now. They go out and sign two workhorses in the offseason. Then, yeah, I mean, Daniel Lynch can be a number four. But with right now, next year, when I look at this rotation, I see Bubich, Singer, and Lynch being in it. And Brady Singer is going to be your number one. Oh, and Brad Keller, by the way. Mm-hmm. So if the Royals are going to add a fifth guy, it'll be hopefully a guy that can give you 170 innings. They're not going to go out and get a James Shields, at least not my belief. They could shock me and say, let's take the pressure off all these young guys in the rotation. Let's go get our horse. To me, there's a couple of guys that needs fixing, but nobody needs more fixing that is broken in the big league level than Jackson Coar.
Kind of off topic, but on topic. Greinke, maybe? Resign Greinke back? Just thinking of pitchers for next year.
I feel like Greinke's going to try to pitch again. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be opposed to it, but I just don't want Greinke to take up a rotation spot. Because if the Royals are trying to make that big jump, I really think they need a guy that you know automatically he can give you 170. Zach Greinke's on pace to finish with less than 140 innings this year. Mm-hmm. That can't be your signing, your workhorse. And I love Greinke. Greinke's done tremendous things for Kansas City baseball. He, when you look at it from a transactional standpoint, he brought the Royals a World Series because that trade brought the Royals Lorenzo Cain, Alcides Escobar, Jake Odorizzi, Jeremy Jeffress. They've then flipped Odorizzi with Will Myers to get Wade Davis and James Shields, and Elliot Johnson, I believe it was. So it's a good idea. If Greinke goes, I'm 39, this is my last year, I'll play on a one-year, $4 million contract. Of course. Yeah, that's fine. That's a guy that maybe you throw out of the bullpen.
It's very team-friendly, too.
Team-friendly. But a little bit, now you can see it's a little bit of an overpay. You overpay for pitching all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, if they go out and get a workhorse, they're going to have to put in some money. Like, they're going to have to pay a guy $15, $16 million a year to be their frontline starter. I don't know who that would be. We listed some guys off on the show yesterday. None of them stand out to me, which is why I think a trade would be more likely than an offseason signing, just because the Royals find their guy and they go, that's who we want. Like, I think they found James Shields 2 years before they traded for him and said, that's going to be our guy when we're ready to compete.
Who do you trade? Who on this team would you be okay with the Royals trading? And I'll tell you this. Mike Boddicker said today, MJ Melendez, he's okay with having to part ways with him.
I could see why people would say MJ Melendez. I'm not one of those people because MJ Melendez is a catcher and they still have Salvi under contract. So it's not like they're losing a positional spot. But MJ's been one of the main bright spots. Like, when you look at a guy right now that's a catcher who's moving to the leadoff spot, I believe he's going to have 20 home runs, and that's going to be from your leadoff hitter. He's a catcher, can move around the field, he's athletic. I don't think MJ Melendez is grow on trees. You know, and Ed Yost's age-old saying, too, I've said age-old now twice in this segment, or not even really age-old, just his old saying of third basemen don't grow on trees. Right, when Mike Moustakas was struggling, I can't just go find another third baseman. And that's the way I kind of feel with MJ Melendez. You know, I think MJ Melendez, in the way you've groomed him and the power he possesses and how he's already fitting in with this young core, I don't see the need to trade for him or trade him away to get somebody else. I would be much more willing to trade pitching than I ever would with some of these young hitters because they've worked with Drew Saylor. They've been working with Alex Zumwalt, Mike Tosar, and Keone Duren. That, to me, I feel like that's how they're going to build their offense. Now, pitching, if somebody came over and said, you know, we want Daniel Lynch. I love Daniel Lynch, but if they offered something that was a considerable amount of talent, you go out and get a number one in that deal, or maybe a right fielder with some pop and a good right fielder. I'm not just trading him for a bag of potato chips here. It would have to really floor me. That deal would have to floor me. And I think none of these guys right now, because they're so fresh in the big league level, it's very similar in my eyes to in 2012 when the Royals had Hosmer, Moose, Kane, Escobar, Salvi. It would have been like, well, who are you willing to trade from that group? Well, the Royals weren't going to because they were already starting to build their core. And I think right now the Royals are trying to build their core. Therefore, I feel like right now the Royals know we're not going to trade any of these guys. Unless somebody approaches you with a James Shields or Wade Davis type of trade, which I don't know who that would be. I don't really have anybody that I have my eye on because this is really the foundation-laying season, having all these young guys. I don't want to trade Vinny Pasquantino. I don't want to trade Nick Prado, MJ Melendez, Bobby Witt Jr., you know, Michael Massey, because I want to see these guys in Kansas City.
Any of the guys that we haven't seen up here yet or have seen glimpses of but are back down?
Yeah, and that's why with this top 10 list that we've been going over, I mean, who would garner a lot of attention? That's the difference between the 2011 Royals and the 2022 Royals is that the Royals had a lot of pieces to offer. They had Will Myers. You know, they had still guys down in that farm system. They had the Mike. Did they still have Mike Montgomery? No, they didn't. I think Mike Montgomery was gone at that point. But they had Johnny Giovitella, mm-hmm. who didn't make much noise in Kansas City, but was at the time considered a top 10 prospect.
Right.
You know, they had some top 100 guys that they would have been willing to trade, and that's why when I look at this top 10 list, it would have to be somebody like a Gavin Cross. You know, very early into his time with Kansas City, you like him, but other teams would go, man, that's a first-round pick from last year. Hell yeah, I'm paying high price for that, but it's also the risk of, man, that's a top 10 pick, and I don't think the Royals want to trade Gavin Cross or Caden Wallace or Ben Kuderna. Like, Ben Kuderna would be one that I think the Royals or other teams would be going after because he's 19, throwing mid to upper 90s, good curveball that he's developing. I mean, that's something where another team would look at and go, yeah, I'm willing to give up a major league piece right now. And that would have to be a team that is worse than the Royals. Mm-hmm. You think about it. If the Royals are the Orioles next year, and what I mean by that is that the Orioles are 57-52 this year, a half a game out of a wild card spot on August 10th, they would be the team to go, okay, we need to add in some pieces. And the Royals could go out and say, let's go get us a starter. And that would be the guy that I think they would have to trade away is maybe Ben Kuderna. But to me, this top 10 list, I just can't see anybody that would be willing or other teams would be willing to go after. And the Royals could get valuable talent for.
Maybe if you package them with one of the guys on the major league roster right
sure.
now.
That, like Scott Barlow or something like that?
Exactly. Someone who did not get traded this past deadline. One name that I haven't heard you said yet, but you may have brought him up, that's not on the list, Carter Jensen.
Yeah, and Carter Jensen has channeled some of that power down in Columbia this year. The average isn't there, but you know I'm not really a big fan of batting average. I like OBP. I like slugging. I like WRC+. I like isolated power. That's how I can judge some of these 19 and 20-year-old hitters. Last guy in the top 10, and I hate to be blunt here, there's no reason whatsoever why this guy should be in the top 10. It's Asa Lacy. Asa Lacy has been a complete and utter disaster pitching professionally in the Royals farm system. And maybe that's just he's number 10 because he's still 23 years old, just turned 23. He was a top five draft pick, but my goodness, has it been just abysmal for Asa Lacy. He's pitched in the minor leagues for Kansas City for two seasons. He's started 19 of 26 games. His ERA, 6.72. He has thrown 77 and two-thirds innings. He struck out 109, so he still gets a lot of swing and miss. He's walked 77. He's walked about a guy per inning. So this year, this is when it's really fallen off a cliff for Asa Lacy. Not going to give up on the kid. I still think there's a chance that he can find something, but that windup is very herky-jerky. And if you are throwing a lot of balls and you don't have command, that herky-jerky motion becomes a lot harder to repeat over and over again. And you can see in some of his highlights, some of his film, it doesn't look natural. It looks very uncomfortable. And this year at Northwest Arkansas, so he made a couple of starts down in the rookie ball level with the Arizona Royals, the surprise Royals at that. He threw eight innings and he walked 14 guys. So no command whatsoever. His ERA was 9. Then he gets called up to Double-A Northwest Arkansas where he began the season before he got hurt. He has made three starts and appeared in eight games. His ERA is 10.19. He's thrown 17 and two-thirds innings. He has walked 22. Struck out 20. That's really, really bad if you needed me to tell you that. So Asa Lacy to me, he's got stuff. I just don't know if he'll ever be able to channel that stuff because he can't throw a strike. And if you can't throw a strike, I can't really begin to evaluate what you can be as a pitcher. Because right now, I don't care if he strikes out 10 guys a game. If you walk 10, you can't be a big league pitcher. You can't be a big league starter. You can't be a big league reliever.
Well, you saying all that makes me sound like that. There's just another Jackson Coar down there in the minors then.
But even Jackson Coar didn't have problems with this bad of command. Mm-hmm. And that's the most infuriating thing about it, Marco, is that I'm not even mad with the Royals because he was considered the top left-handed pitcher in that draft. The top left-handed arm. So the Royals didn't make a bad pick. They didn't reach. There's no way they reached for Asa Lacy. There were other teams ahead of the Royals that reached. Now, in this case, it looks like it hasn't panned out because some of these other guys have already shown that they're great. They're great in AA. They're great in AAA. Asa Lacy's yet to have a season where we can go, I can build on that. The command just not been there. And when the command is not there, it's hard to imagine a world where he can turn into the ace that we all believed him to be. When the Royals made that pick, Marco, I was going, that's the ace. That you pair him with Brady Singer, Daniel Lynch, and Chris Bubich, that's a rotation I love. Asa Lacy would be your game one starter in the wild card. You know, he'd be 24, 25. You know, he's a guy that was striking out 16 guys per nine down in Omaha, just lighting it up. I even believed last year. I go, man, you give him a full season in 2021 after the 2020 draft, I guarantee you next year, he's making his first start by June. Never happened. Never came close. And he's not even close next year. To close out this year, I don't see any number unless he just stops walking guys. You know, right now he's pitching out of the bullpen. And he's had outings where he's come out of the bullpen, thrown one inning and walked five guys and given up five runs. They're not hitting him. They're just not swinging because they don't have to because he's throwing that many balls out of the zone. So there is the new top 10 prospects in the Royals system. Nick Prado, 1. Gavin Cross, 2. Michael Massey, 3. Caden Wallace, 4. Ben Kuderna, 5. Mikel Garcia, 6. Nick Lofton, 7. Jonathan Bolin, 8. Jackson Coar, 9. Asa Lacy at number 10. Royals, after splitting the doubleheader yesterday against the Chicago White Sox, they'll be back in action tonight as Chris Bubich will square off with former Royal hero and World Series champion Johnny Cueto. Cueto 4-5 with a 2.91 ERA this year. Bubich 2-6 with a 5.27 ERA. Rose will look to earn at least a split in this four-game set. All right, we're going to take our first break of the show. When we come back, we got some NFL headlines to go over right here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. To The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Have you had the chance yet, Marco, to watch Hard Knocks?
No, gonna do that tonight, though. I was on Twitter at like 9 o'clock yesterday, and I saw all the hype around. I was like, if I didn't have to wake up early, but tune in tonight. You?
I think I'm gonna have to. I'll have the show tonight on 8:10.
Yeah,
that I'll have to talk about a little bit. So I feel like I might have a little bit of time in the afternoon to watch Hard Knocks. You know, at first when I heard the Lions were going to be on it, they always pick, for the most part, bad teams. Because I think people want to see chaos. They want to see poorly run teams. They want to see teams with a coach that's super loud.
Yeah.
But I'll give Dan Campbell credit. I think he is the right coach for the Lions. I don't know if the Lions will ever get to the postseason with Dan Campbell. I want to believe they will. But the good thing is, at least if you're a Detroit fan, they'll be the most entertaining bad team in football this year. And I don't think there's many fan bases out there that can say that. And you may be one of those fans that goes, I don't care if we're entertaining, if we've got a coach that's passionate, that's fiery, and we've got players that are fun to watch. If we're losing games, I don't care. I'm not here for moral victories. And I get that. Right, nobody likes moral victories. You get tired of it after a while, and the Lions have been bad for my entire life, at least, for Marco's entire life. I think for nearly everybody's entire life, the Lions have not been a very good football team. But what I've seen in some of these clips is that Dan Campbell has these guys truly wanting to play for him. And I thought at first, when Dan Campbell was hired for Detroit, that it was going to be a little bit cheesy. Like, it was this persona that he was walking into just because he was a new coach. He's the bad franchise, and the only way he's going to stand out and the only way he's going to get people to root for him is if he's this psychotic type of guy that wants people to bite kneecaps off, and he drinks, what, like 9 coffees in the morning? Like, just an energetic, crazy dude. He's, what, 6'4", 260 pounds of pure muscle? Like, he's this big, jacked dude.
Hard to miss him.
Very hard to miss him. Loud voice. Like, when you think about a yelling head coach, that's what one would look like. One of those mean yelling head coaches. But he's actually a really nice guy from what we've all seen in Hard Knocks, or at least the highlights for me. I don't know if you've actually seen it yet. But even interviews and stuff, he seems like a very personable guy, which is cool to see. And I really don't have any care for the Detroit Lions. I don't care if they're good. I don't care if they're bad. But I am somebody that is rooting for Dan Campbell. Because he's a guy that I think when he first got that job, many people mocked. And going, well, that's just another embarrassing hire for the Detroit Lions. But I can't really say that this time around, they made the bad hire. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. Maybe that's just because Detroit didn't draft enough talent. They didn't go out and get the right weapons. I mean, Jared Goff being the quarterback, I don't know how far Jared Goff can take you with that roster. We know Jared Goff can take a team to the Super Bowl, but that's with a great roster like LA had and a great head coach like Sean McVay. But to me, I actually have a desire a little bit. So if the Lions are playing, you know, usually on Thanksgiving, if the Lions playing, and I go, I really don't want to see this. Lions and Bears, like who the hell wants to tune in for that? I mean, it's football. I can't wait to start having that saying again come back, Marco, where it's football, right? I'd ask you, are you going to watch tonight's game? Well, yeah, because it's football. It may be the Jags and
but no football in the night. Don't get me excited like that.
No football tonight.
Oh,
but it's
man, you
it's
said that.
Back.
I was like, oh, I'm ready to tune into some preseason.
It's coming back. It is coming back. And now, actually, I'm curious now that I bring that up, and I just teased it. The next NFL game should be tomorrow. August 11th, is that tomorrow?
Doubleheader.
Hell yeah. NFL Network, Giants, Patriots, and Titans, Ravens. And the Chiefs, the Jefes, right? That it's
Los Jefes.
Jefes. Yep. Los Jefes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Los Jefes will be on Saturday at noon against the Bears. I don't know the
Bears.
The Bears. That's what we'll just call them. The Bears.
Could be very fascinating. There's a lot of stuff coming out of Chicago's training camp. That
are they? Will Justin Fields be playing Week One?
Will they have a legit receiver on the field?
That's true. And in general, that would have been a fun game to go up to. Anyways, I can't wait for the Chiefs to go back and play Chicago in Soldier Field, because last time they were there, it was what, December? It was December of the Super Bowl season. It was
Sunday
so
night football, yeah.
Damn cold, and the Chiefs waxed them. But I would love to, because the next time the Chiefs play the NFC North, they'll flip all those games where they played them, right? So the Chiefs will have to go to Lambeau. That'd be a fun game to go to. They'll have to go to Minnesota, and then they'll also host the Lions and the Bears. So whenever that would happen, a couple years down the road, the Chiefs will go back to Soldier Field. I definitely want to go, because I think going to Chicago to watch a football game would be quite the treat. But with the Lions, they've always been just another football game to me. I've never had any desire to watch the Lions unless they're playing somebody like the Raiders or the Broncos or the Chargers or the Ravens or the Bengals, like a team that actually has AFC playoff implications. Like, that's the only reason I'd ever tune in to a Lions game, because if the Chiefs aren't playing yet, usually I just stick with Red Zone. If the Lions pop up on my screen, I have time to go to the bathroom. I have time to get another drink. Now, they're kind of much must-watch TV to me. Like, when your team gets Hard Knocks and you get familiar with some of these players, does it not make you want to watch that team a little bit more or have a special connection to that team? Like, I can only imagine, like, it was the Texans, what, 2 years ago? The Cowboys were last year. Now, the Cowboys, I would not root for. I don't feel them being the bad little spunky team that you want to see win five games.
Yeah, then there was the Vegas. Then there was the Raiders and Chargers one.
The Texans might have been a couple years back then.
Yeah, because COVID year was Chargers and Raiders, because it was very boring. There was no games, you know. NFL, it was getting ready for the COVID season. That's
why. And it just wasn't very entertaining. But I will have to tune in to Hard Knocks, because love Dan Campbell. Excited to see what this next step will be for Detroit, because last year they were a terrible team. They were a competitive, terrible team. They won four games, and that was a big step up, actually. And it was I did not expect the Lions to win more than two, because I did not think Jared Goff was a good quarterback. And Jared Goff was hurt for five, six, maybe seven games of the season. They had a couple of guys starting games that I do not remember ever playing in the NFL before that. So we'll see just where Dan Campbell takes the Detroit Lions in year two of his tenure there. Now, another big headline in the NFL. This is a team that's going to rival others for a top five pick, the Seattle Seahawks. And first question I'll ask for you, Marco, what would it take to fire Pete Carroll? For this, how bad would the season have to go for Seattle for Pete Carroll, who's now, what, 72, 73, I feel like? Maybe he's just high 60s. I don't know.
I feel like it'd have to be a mutual agreement now. Mutual.
You think?
Or at least they'd put it out there as a mutual parting away. It's kind of like the Todd Haley situation, although he's not, his coaching resume does not stand with Pete Carroll's 3-13, 2-14 season, just one where it's just very, I think that this year for Pete Carroll is not necessarily a hot seat year for him. But if Seattle feels the right coach comes along, that's what it takes. How about that? The next man for the job is comes along for Seattle, because I think that's one of their things. Is just like how they weren't ready for the departure of Russell Wilson, I don't think they're ready for Pete Carroll to leave yet.
And they still have Tyler Lockett. They still have DK Metcalf. I just don't
Extended
DK Metcalf. So they're not punting on the idea of being a good team in the near future. But it feels like with this Seattle team, they've got a quarterback problem. And can you really be a quarterback in this league? Or can you be a successful quarterback in this league when maybe your weapons around you aren't the best? I mean, how much of a transcendent quarterback do you have to be to overcome a bad receiving core, a bad offensive line? Well, it's kind of the opposite for Seattle. They don't have a quarterback. They don't have a quarterback picked yet. Geno Smith is starting game one in the preseason. Drew Lock will likely get another starter. He'll play after Geno Smith. But to me, Marco, if you're deciding between Geno Smith and Drew Lock, I feel like you're going to have to be fighting for maybe 5-6 wins. I don't know that Drew Lock or Geno Smith can take you further than 5 or 6 wins. And yes, the NFC West isn't a gauntlet. It was good last year. But at the same time, Seattle with Russell Wilson was a part of that gauntlet. Now they're the team, I think, at the bottom. They're the team looking up. Because Drew Lock or Geno Smith is not going to be that quarterback that can win you shootouts, that can take you the length of the field in 2 minutes and give you a game-winning drive. Not against the Rams, not against the Cardinals, not against the 49ers. So to me, I don't think Pete Carroll's on the hot seat, but I think Seattle's going to be very, very bad this year. What say you, Marco Marquez?
In a division that they're in also, man, oof, I don't see them winning a game in the NFC West
really?
This year. No. I think Detroit finishes with a better record than Seattle.
Wow.
But that's also, got to remember, too, strength of schedule, who they're playing. Jeff Chedia, who's a Detroit guy on the morning show, we went through the schedule with him. He had him going 10-7. So go look at Detroit's schedule, man. It's not that bad.
And the NFC North is awful. The NFC North is absolutely terrible. So I'm kind of with you, and we did just talk about the Detroit Lions. So I'm going to say that the Detroit Lions are maybe a 6-win team. I'll put the Seahawks at 5. I haven't looked at the Seahawks' full schedule. I can't imagine they're going to fare very well when they haven't even picked between Geno Smith or Drew Lock. Last bit of NFL headlines for you. We'll give you one more before we head to break here. And, you know, it has been rather quiet, but the one thing at least that was maybe catching my eye a little bit, and it's with Baltimore. Can the Ravens rebuild a foundation that I feel like is a little bit fractured, it's a little bit broken at the moment because Lamar Jackson wants a big contract. And this is one of the NFL headlines that, you know, they're bringing back, you know, J.K. Dobbins, you know, Justice Hill, who they mentioned is coming off an Achilles injury because that running back room was ravaged. They lost 2 running backs, I believe, before the start of the season, or maybe it was in week 1. They still went on to beat the Chiefs, but Lamar Jackson getting a healthy Ravens team back. Is it good enough to maybe fix up that broken foundation, or have the Ravens already lost that power to the Cincinnati Bengals in the AFC North?
No, I think this year for Baltimore is going to be a comeback tour, because this was a team that was brutally hit with injuries last year, even before week 1 had started. Lamar Jackson was playing unhealthy. You were missing your 3 running backs, of course. Training camp, Mark Andrews was dealing with health issues, but he was still able to put up historic tight end numbers last year. I think Baltimore puts the teams on the reminder this year. Cincinnati also, that they gotta remind people whose division it is, because they were the division winner the year before. So, I like Baltimore this year, especially if they're going in healthy. Because, and if Lamar doesn't get signed to an extension, just even more fuel to the fire on that one.
Yeah, I'm very curious how the AFC North shakes up, because the Cincinnati Bengals are the new shiny toy. Baltimore seems like old news, but I think it's only going to put more fuel into Baltimore's tank to try to maybe take back the AFC North. All right, we take our final break of the show. When we come back, we'll have some more MLB to talk about a little bit, maybe a little more NFL before we wrap it up with some Fact or Fiction right here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. I don't know if you got a chance to see this, Marco, and it's from Yahoo Sports, or at least from Jack Baer. He wrote this article. I didn't see too much about it in NFL headlines. Maybe I missed it. But apparently, Steelers wide receiver Diontae Johnson was sued for allegedly not showing at his own youth camp. And I don't know how you can do that, what your excuse would be. But according to this article, the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver was sued in federal court last week by the organizers of a youth camp bearing his name that allegedly had to refund families after he no-showed in May, according to Jason Mackey of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. So now I've got a little bit more trust that this story is actually true. Paywall for the Pittsburgh Gazette. But still.
Right.
That's a very bad look for the community. At least for when you're trying to win over a fan base. Didn't they just sign Deontay Johnson to a deal?
Gave him an extension, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Well, it was
at his own youth camp. Not even like a Steelers camp for kids. It was his own camp, the Deontay Johnson youth camp. Didn't even show.
There has to be a reason for it, but I don't know. That's right. Not a good look for somebody that's new to the Steelers this year, new to the city of Pittsburgh.
According to the Pittsburgh Gazette, the camp was supposed to take place on May 22nd at Couples Stadium on the south side with a $125 admission fee to include a team photo with Deontay Johnson, in addition to a camp t-shirt and take-home items from the event sponsors. Other levels of interaction with Johnson were offered for additional money. In the filing, there are details of the conversations leading up to the camp, seeming with nothing coming from Johnson's side. So, the flashpoint came with an incident flex work alleges occurred at 9:47 a.m. on May 22nd, just 13 minutes before the start of camp, when one of Johnson's agents, Max Lepselter, texted a group of camp organizers saying his client's flight from Saratoga, Florida, was canceled the previous night and he'd arrive later that day. So, not a bad reason.
Mm-mm. But
still not a good reason to miss your own camp.
It sounded like he wasn't quick to find a solution.
Find a solution, yeah.
So they'll find one in court.
It says, okay, so there you go. The last thing we'll say before we get to fact or fiction. The report then describes an exchange between Johnson's agent and a camp organizer where it was established the whiteout did not want to wait around for his second flight and left the airport.
Wow.
They then floated ideas about Johnson doing a free camp and signing gloves to make up for the no-show. According to personal service agreement, the suit references Johnson was to pay a cancellation fee of $2,250 if he canceled his appearance after April 5th, along with paying flex work for all expenses incurred to date.
He'll be able to afford it.
Oh, easily. Just a bad look. Bad look if you're a Pittsburgh fan that wanted to bring your kid to this camp, the Deontay Johnson camp where the guy's not even there. That's pretty laughable in my eyes. All right. Time for some fact or fiction. Five questions, five takes, and well under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Jack, fact or fiction, Asa Lacy makes his debut before 2024.
If Asa Lacy doesn't debut next year or before 2024, he won't be in the Royals organization anymore. I would say that there's got to be some time where they're just going to try it. They're just going to say, okay, after a couple of starts in Double-A, maybe he gets a spot start or just throw him out of the bullpen just because they don't want to admit they failed on him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go fact, though. I think that is, if he doesn't debut in the next 2 years, he will no longer be with the Royals. That's where I'll put it.
Fact or fiction, Chris Bubich strikes out six tonight, six plus tonight.
He's been great of late. The White Sox are going to have a righty-heavy lineup. I'd like to see a similar start that Daniel Lynch had in Chicago where he carved him up over, I think it was 5 2/3. I'd love to see the same thing from Chris Bubich. I think he's going to pitch well tonight. I don't see him striking out a ton, though, so I think it would be around the 4 or 5 range, or maybe right at 6, which would be a fact here, but I'm going to go fiction, not 6-plus strikeouts tonight for Chris Bubich.
Fact or fiction, the Lions finished third in the NFC North.
Yeah, I'm going to go fact on that. I think the Bears will have the worst record in football this year. I think that's my hot take.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they have any weapons. They're going to have Justin Fields as a second-year quarterback. There's not a lot to build off of in Chicago. I think the Lions are better structured, which is crazy to say, but I feel like the Lions will have about 6 wins to see the Bears having about 3 or 4.
Fact or fiction, Seattle generates a top-3 pick, draft pick, excuse me.
If you think they're not going to win a game in the NFC West, then yes, it's going to be fact. I think they'll be a top-3 pick. And when you are starting either Geno Smith or Drew Lock, you're not going to be very good.
Could always get one through trade, though, too, if you wanted.
Yes, that is possible. They go and get Jimmy G if that makes him any better. But I think it would have to take DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett getting hurt. So maybe I'll go Fiction, not a top three pick.
And lastly, Factor Fiction, Isaiah Pacheco has his first touchdown for the Chiefs on Saturday.
Fact. I think he's going to get a large chunk of the carries. I think him and Derek Gore will likely get the majority of the carries on Saturday. So I'm going to go fact. I think Isaiah Pacheco will get his first touchdown on Saturday against the Chicago Bears. There is Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We will talk to you tomorrow at 10 a.m. You take it easy, Kansas City. That's right, yeah.